You're listening to Around and About on WUTC 88.1. Finally, the Chattanooga Theater Center's revival of the musical Camelot is what we're going to talk about right now. Scott Dunlap is directing it. Dunlap says the show's lyricist, Alan J. Lerner, went to school with John F. Kennedy. As Dunlap sees it, Lerner was using the tales of King Arthur and his Knights of the Round Table as a metaphor for the ideals espoused by Kennedy. WUTC's Richard Winham has this conversation.
It wasn't necessarily inspired by JFK, but I'm certain that he was fairly aware that his buddy from school was planning to at least run for office. Actually, the notion struck me the first time I saw Camelot, which I was probably 11 or 12 years old, saw the film. And I remember my mom saying, you know, they referred to Kennedy's administration as Camelot. And so this weird little notion of the two things being married in some way has always been in my mind. And yet I still wasn't sure if it would work.
Scott Dunlap's nervousness about his idea to stage Camelot, a musical that made its Broadway debut in 1960, to set it in the early 1960s with a cast dressed in madman-era costumes and the score rewritten for a small jazz group, his natural nervousness over this audacious reworking of the classic musical is rapidly beginning to dissipate as it all starts to come together in rehearsal.
It's still a bit of a challenge, though, to do what you're trying to do.
Oh, totally.
Even though you've got all of these...
ideas.
Well,
notions.
All this context. Uh-huh. And it works, intellectually, it works perfectly.
Right.
But there must be challenges, as you said before about Camelot itself.
Yes.
There's also problems in trying to reproduce it as a musical.
Well,
and changing things up, right?
People will be people. So first you have to have the right people audition, you know. But like, for example, Scott Shaw, who is playing King Arthur, I think he'd studied a lot. He'd watched the film a lot. There's a recording of Richard Harris being on Broadway after he had already done the film. But doing the role on Broadway in like the early 80s. And I think he'd really studied it. And so the first couple of rehearsals where I was like, stop talking like you're a king. I want you to talk like you're a president. I want you to talk like you're a man. It was really, really hard for him. And so there have been some interesting challenges. But in that, there's been some really great work. It's much more humanizing. It's much more interesting to watch the scenes unfold. My first assessment of Camelot was when the cast sat down, I told them, it's written very much Father King and Mother Queen, and he's always sitting on his throne pontificating, and she's doing embroidery next to him, you know. And I said he might as well have a pipe in his mouth, and it's just too cheeky and adorable. And I said we're going to get below that. And so the scene that I actually referred to that as, we now have set with Guinevere and Arthur being in bed, and it's really romantic and it's really sweet and it's funny, and it seems like a newlywed couple, you know? So it's immediately accessible in a different way and far less cute. So it's been an interesting challenge, and the actors have really helped. They're very open to trying, you know, and that's where we have succeeded, I think, so far, is what we're trying different things and executing different things, and it's all going fairly well so far.
Camelot is a very romantic idea, the idea of King Arthur and his court and Guinevere and all that. That's what it's about, right?
It is.
Based on, anyway.
Yeah, yeah. It's certainly based on this sort of tragic, torrid affair. But I think this goes to a little bit of what Lerner was talking about with the government. In the idea of Camelot, what Arthur is creating is a civilized society. Before that, it's very much sort of Game of Thrones, you know, knights going around the country, whacking people, whoever they feel that they can just beat up on and take control of. And so he comes up with the Round Table, where let's sit around and actually use our powers for good. And then within the play, he also creates the civil court system of a trial by jury, which kind of backfires on him when it comes to Guinevere.
So you think that was Lerner's intention, was to reflect the current situation in a play about another era entirely?
I think in a way, I think he was kind of trying to say, aren't we great? Look at us. You know, it's like you said, the 60s belonged to America. They were everything. They were, you know, They had just come out of World War II and had all of this progress and wonderful things were happening, and it seemed like nothing could ever go wrong. So I think that in a way he was saying, you know, here's another time that everything was great and everything was wonderful. The irony of that is in some ways it can't last forever, you know. And that's already in Camelot as well, that things are going to go bad because people are people. I think that's one of the really interesting things about Camelot is the flaws in the characters. They are just people, and people are going to do things that they're not supposed to do and can bring the downfall of an empire.
So the more I listen to you, the more it sounds like it's actually the other way around, that the musical came first. And then the notion that administration was Camelot.
Yes. Well, actually, Jackie is the one that called it Camelot after he died. And apparently part of that was they liked to, at night before going to bed, they would listen to the cast album, and it was his favorite musical. And I think that the notion of it being Camelot really just comes from the song Camelot, where, you know, everything is perfect in Camelot. The snow leaves by such and such a date. You know, the fall leaves fall during the day and they all blow away at night. You don't have to rake. And, you know, I think that notion of America being perfect in 1960 is kind of what she was alluding to, you know, and that now that era was gone because he was gone, which in a way is kind of true.
After dressing the cast in madman era clothes, Scott Dunlap asked his friend, Tim Hink, to rearrange the songs for a small jazz group. In the original staging of the musical on Broadway, the songs were arranged very differently. This is the song, How to Handle a Woman, from the original score.
How to handle a woman, there's a way, said the wise old man, a way known by every woman since the whole rigmarole began. Do I flatter her? I begged him answer. Do I threaten or cajole or plead? Do I brood or play the gay romancer? Said he, smiling, no indeed.
This is Tim Hink's rearrangement.
How to handle a woman. Mark me well, I will tell you, sir. The way to handle a woman is to love her. Simply love her. Merely love her. Love her. Love her.
I basically just sat down with the music and just played the melody by itself because I knew we needed to keep the notes of the melody pretty much intact.
Right.
And then
you sat down at the piano to play
exactly
them?
And just played strictly the melody without looking at the accompaniment at all. And that kind of helps me as a composer sort of think, you know, if I had come up with this melody just now and I'm thinking in the realm of jazz, what chords and what structure would go under this melody. And so it was kind of like a composition project, which is really fun. And so just basically writing jazz accompaniment to these melodies. And like Scott said, because that is something that was in the musical vernacular of the period anyway, there's a lot of jazz influence in popular music then, the melodies, I think, came out of that background already and so fit perfectly.
Say moi. I'm forced to admit, 'tis I humbly reply, that mortal whom these marvels can do, c'est moi, 'tis I. I'm never lost in battle or game, I'm simply the best by far.
Do you think Lerner was making a comment on the situation in the world as he saw it at that point?
I think so. I think he was also trying to tell us that what we do, what theater folk do, is important. you can change people's minds. You know, they're doing all these, all this research with students, that kids who read of Mice and Men, they could watch a movie of Mice and Men, but if they see Of Mice and Men performed live, they retain more details, they're more empathetic with the characters. They understand more what the author's intent was. That seeing live theater, having a story unfold in front of you, you emotionally respond to it. You know, the book you can close and put down. Theater is a different thing. And there are many people, I think, who think, you know, you have to be still and sit on your hands and not respond. And actually, the audience is a cast member. They're another character in the play. They really help the play form. And people that get that, people that come and try that, it's really exciting, you know.
I just find that the whole notion of collaboration that seems to be at the heart of what you're doing is really fascinating. You're collaborating with people who are no longer alive.
Right.
How much do you try to realize what you think was the composer's intent, and how much do you put of yourself into it?
In this production, it's fun to say, okay, what were the musical styles that were prevalent or accessible at that time, and then say, okay, which style fits the intent of this section of dialogue or whatever. And so in that sense, I feel like I've been pretty heavy-handed in what I've done with the score. But on the other sense, it's strange how perfectly a lot of the songs lent themselves to a genre. So I think in the end, there's not a lot of drastic and crazy choices that I had to make. They were pretty, they fit really well.
And they're organic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Because what I'm getting is increasingly is that you're doing what Lerner would like to have done.
I really think so.
There's no way you could get away with that at that point in time.
I think so. And like you said, organic is the perfect word. Everything seems to be falling into place. It seems natural. It's a natural fit.
What I'm beginning to pick up on is that there's a story in there for you, Scott, that this resonates with you personally.
Honestly, I didn't realize it. I you know, thrift store shopping or going to antique stores, I've always been very attracted to mid-century stuff, tables and lamps and clothes and all sorts of things. But actually, Mad Men, when it came on, I remember Matthew Weiner saying that he used to sit at the top of his stairs and listen to his parents' cocktail parties. Mm-hmm. And that was the inspiration for Mad Men, was what the adults were doing. And I think that, I mean, that's the same thing. I grew up with a single mom, but she would have her friends over, and we lived in a townhouse apartment, and I would sit at the top of the stairs and listen to them. And their lives, it made me want to be an adult so bad. Their lives seem so interesting. Now it really is horrible. I wish I could go back and just sit at the top of the stairs and listen to it. But then that notion I could totally relate to. And then with Mad Men, the interesting thing for me was it gave my grandparents a life, you know, because they were perfect. They never did anything wrong. And suddenly watching the show and thinking, oh, wait, that's right. They probably had sex. You know, they probably had marital problems. They probably had problems at work. They, you know, I know that my grandfather was a smoker, and stopping was really hard for him. And coming from an era, you know, they were the greatest generation, quote unquote, and coming from an era where that's just what you did. That was smoking was like getting dressed, you know. And so it made them flawed in a beautiful way.
How to handle a woman. Mark me well, I will tell you, sir. The way to handle a woman.
The Chattanooga Theatre Center's production of Camelot opens in the Circle Theatre on Friday, June 17th. Details are on their website, theatrecenter.com, or by phone, 267-8534.
Love her, love her.
WUTC's Around and About. I'm Richard Winham.